Welcome to this week's Money Matters. I'm Virginia Voice volunteer Angela Plott. Today's first article is from Kiplinger Personal Finance, 19 IRS Red Flags. What are your chances of being audited? These red flags could increase your chances of the IRS selecting your return for audit. By Joy Taylor, January 26, 2024. As you're getting ready to file your tax return, you may be wondering about the chances that the IRS will audit your return. Your fear might be heightened, knowing that the Inflation Reduction Act, enacted 2 years ago, gave the IRS $80 billion in extra funds over 10 years, with a large chunk of that money being used by the agency for increased enforcement activities. Congress has clawed back about $25 billion of that funding in last spring's debt limit deal. Most people can still breathe easily, however, because the majority of individual returns escape the audit machine. In recent years, the IRS has audited significantly less than 1% of all individual tax returns. Plus, more audits are handled solely by mail, meaning taxpayers selected for an audit typically never actually meet with an IRS agent in person. Also, increased audits won't happen overnight. It will take the IRS time to hire experienced examiners and to train them to audit complicated tax returns. Most of the enforcement effects from the IRS funding won't be felt by taxpayers for a couple of years. But this doesn't mean it's a tax cheat free-for-all. The bad news is that your chances at the unenviable audit lottery escalate, and sometimes significantly, depending on various factors, including the amount of income you report, the complexity of your return, the types and amounts of deductions or other tax breaks you claim, whether you're engaged in a business, or whether you own foreign assets. Math errors could also draw an extra look from the IRS, but they usually don't lead to a full-blown exam. The same goes for errors with refundable tax credits, such as the earned income tax credit and the refundable portion of the child tax credit. In the end, there's no sure way to predict an IRS audit, but these 19 audit red flags could increase your chances of drawing unwanted attention from the IRS. 1. Failing to report all taxable income. The IRS gets copies of all the 1099s and W-2s you receive, so be sure you report all required income on your return. IRS computers are pretty good at cross-checking the forms with the income shown on your return. A mismatch sends up a red flag and causes the IRS computers to spit out a bill that the IRS will mail to you. These letters don't count as audits for purposes of the IRS's audit rate. If you receive a 1099 showing income that isn't yours or listing incorrect income, get the issuer to file a correct form from the IRS. Report all income sources on your 1040 return, whether or not you receive a form such as a 1099. For example, if you get paid for walking dogs, tutoring, driving for Uber or Lyft, giving piano lessons, or selling crafts through Etsy, the money you receive is taxable. 2. Making a lot of money. While the overall individual audit rates are extremely low, the odds increase significantly as your income goes up, especially if you have business income. Remember, the IRS is getting more money for audits, with a significant chunk of its extra funding over 10 years dedicated to enforcement activities and collection measures. The Treasury Department and the IRS say that some enforcement funds will be used to audit more high net worth individuals and pass-through entities, such as LLCs and partnerships, among other taxpayers. Treasury officials have made a big promise, saying that taxpayers earning under $400,000 won't see increased audit rates relative to recent years. The IRS will be hard-pressed to keep this promise, but it's too soon to know for sure. The IRS's High Wealth Exam Squad is getting back into the action. This specialized group within the IRS tackles examinations of the super-rich. Revenue agents take a kitchen sink approach in auditing these individuals by reviewing not only their 1040 returns, but also returns of entities they control, both foreign and domestic. We're not saying you should try to make less money. Everyone wants to be a millionaire. You just need to understand that the more income shown on your return, the more likely it is that the IRS will be knocking on your door. Number 3. Non-filers. The IRS hasn't always been diligent in pursuing individuals who don't file required tax returns. In fact, the agency has been chastised by Treasury inspectors and lawmakers on its years-long lack of enforcement activity in this area. So, it shouldn't come as a surprise that high-income non-filers now top the list of IRS's strategic enforcement priorities. The primary emphasis is on individuals who receive income in excess of $100,000 but didn't file a return. Collections officers will contact taxpayers and work with them to help resolve the issue and bring them into compliance. People who refuse to comply can be subject to levies, liens, or even criminal charges. 4. Taking higher than average deductions, losses, or credits. If the deductions, losses, or credits on your return are disproportionately large compared with your income, the IRS may want to take a second look at your return. Taking a big loss from a sale of a rental property or other investments can also spike the IRS's curiosity. Ditto for bad debt deductions or worthless stock. But if you have the proper documentation for your deduction, loss, or credit, don't be afraid to claim it. Don't ever feel like you have to pay the IRS more tax than you actually owe. 5. Taking large charitable deductions. We all know that charitable contributions are a great write-off and help you feel all warm and fuzzy inside. However, if your charitable deductions are disproportionately large compared with your income, it raises a red flag. That's because the IRS knows what the average charitable donation is for folks at your income level. Also, if you don't get an appraisal for donations of valuable property, or if you fail to file IRS Form 8283 for non-cash donations over $500, you become an even bigger audit target. And if you've donated a conservation or facade easement to charity, or if you're an investor in a partnership, LLC, or trust that made such a donation, your chances of hearing from the IRS rise exponentially. Battling abusive syndicated conservation easement deals is a strategic enforcement priority of the tax agency. Congress has even recently stepped in to disallow charitable deductions in the most egregious conservation easement cases. 6. Running a business. Schedule C is a treasure trove of tax deductions for self-employed people. But it's also a goldmine for IRS agents, who know from experience that self-employed people sometimes claim excessive deductions and don't report all of their income. The IRS looks at both higher-grossing sole proprietorships and smaller ones. Sole proprietors reporting at least $100,000 of gross receipts on Schedule C and cash-intensive businesses such as taxis, car washes, bars, hair salons, restaurants, and the like have a higher audit risk. Ditto for business owners who report substantial losses on Schedule C, especially if those losses can offset in whole or in part, other income reported on the return, such as wages or investment income. Also, claiming 100% business use of a vehicle is a prime audit red flag. IRS agents know that it's rare for someone to actually use a vehicle 100% of the time for business, especially if no other vehicle is available for personal use. The IRS also targets heavy SUVs and large trucks used for business, especially those bought late in the year. That's because these vehicles are eligible for more favorable depreciation and expensing write-offs. Be sure you keep detailed mileage logs and precise calendar entries for the purpose of every road trip. Sloppy record keeping makes it easy for a revenue agent to disallow your deduction. 7. Writing off a hobby loss. Sorry to inform you, but you're a prime audit target if you report multiple years of losses on Schedule C of Form 1040, run an activity that sounds like a hobby, and have lots of income from other sources. The IRS is on the hunt for taxpayers who year after year report large losses from hobby-sounding activities to help offset other income, such as wages or business or investment earnings. The hobby loss rules are often litigated in the tax court. The IRS usually wins in court, partly because it tends to settle cases in which it doesn't believe it can prevail. But taxpayers have also pulled out a victory in a number of court cases. To be eligible to deduct a loss, you must be running the hobby in a business-like manner and have a reasonable expectation of making a profit. If your activity generates profit 3 out of 5 years or 2 out of 7 years for horse breeding, the law presumes that you're in a business to make a profit, unless the IRS establishes otherwise. The analysis is trickier if you can't meet these safe harbors. That's because the determination of whether an activity is properly categorized as a hobby or a business is then based on each taxpayer's facts and circumstances. If you're audited, the IRS is going to make you prove you have a legitimate business and not a hobby. Number 8. Failing to report certain professional earnings as self-employment income. Some limited partners and LLC members who don't file Schedule SE or pay self-employment tax are on the IRS's radar. The agency has an ongoing audit campaign involving the issue of when limited partners and LLC members in professional service industries owe self-employment taxes on their distributive share of the firm's income. In 2017, the tax court ruled that members of a law firm organized as a limited liability company and who actively participated in the LLC's operations and in management weren't mere investors and were liable for self-employment taxes. And just last year, the tax court decided that limited partners who actively participate in a limited partnership could owe self-employment tax. That case involved a hedge fund. LLC and LP owners in law, medicine, consulting, accounting, architecture, and other professional service sectors are being eyed by IRS examiners who have been conducting audits over the past few years. 9. Claiming rental losses. The passive loss rules usually prevent the deduction of rental real estate losses, but there are two important exceptions. First, if you actively participate in the renting of your property, you can deduct up to $25,000 of loss against your other income. This $25,000 allowance phases out as adjusted gross income exceeds $100,000 and disappears entirely once your AGI reaches $150,000. A second exception applies to real estate professionals who spend more than 50% of their working hours and over 750 hours each year materially participating in real estate as developers, brokers, landlords, or the like. They can write off rental losses. The IRS actively scrutinizes large rental real estate losses, especially those written off by taxpayers claiming to be real estate pros. It's pulling returns of individuals who claim they are real estate professionals and whose W-2 forms or other non-real estate Schedule C businesses show lots of income. Agents are checking to see whether these filers worked the necessary hours, especially in cases of landlords whose day jobs are not in the real estate business. Number 10, claiming the American Opportunity Tax Credit. College is expensive, and the tax law gives individuals some tax breaks to help with the cost. One of these is the American Opportunity Tax Credit, or the AOTC. The AOTC is worth up to $2,500 per student for each of the first 4 years of college. It's based on 100% of the first $2,000 spent on qualifying college expenses and 25% of the next $2,000. And 40% of the credit is refundable, meaning you get it even if you don't owe any tax. This tax saver begins to phase out for joint return filers with modified adjusted gross incomes above $160,000 or $80,000 for single filers. The student must be in school at least half-time. Eligible expenses include tuition, books, and required fees, but not room and board. The IRS is ramping up its efforts in enforcing the AOTC. Among the problem areas it is focusing on, taking credit for more than 4 years for the same student, omitting the school's taxpayer ID number from Form 8863, which is the form used to claim the AOTC, taking the credit without receiving Form 1098-T from the school, and claiming multiple tax breaks for the same college expenses. Number 11, incorrectly reporting the health premium tax credit. The premium tax credit, which is over 10 years old, helps individuals pay for health insurance they buy through the marketplace. Prior to 2021, the credit was available for people with household incomes ranging from 100 to 400% of the federal poverty level. For 2021 through 2025, some people with incomes over 400% of the poverty level can also get credits, depending on the cost of the policy. Individuals who are eligible for Medicare, Medicaid, or other federal insurance do not qualify, nor do people who are able to get affordable health coverage through their employer. The credit is estimated when you go on a marketplace website, such as healthcare.gov, to buy insurance. You can choose to have the credit paid in advance directly to the health insurance company to lower your monthly payments. You then generally have to attach IRS Form 8962 to your tax return to compute your actual credit. List any advance subsidy paid to the insurer and then reconcile the two figures. If your credit exceeds the premium advances, you can claim the excess on your Form 1040. If the credit is less than the advances, most people will need to repay all or part of the excess. Erroneous reporting of the health premium credit is an audit red flag. The IRS's computers flag returns showing incomes above the limit to take the credit. The IRS is also on the prowl for people who elected to have their subsidy paid directly to the insurance company but did not file an income tax return to reconcile the advances with the actual credit. 12. Taking an early payout from an IRA or 401k account. The IRS wants to be sure that owners of traditional IRAs and participants in 401ks and other workplace retirement plans are properly reporting and paying tax on distributions. Special attention is being given to payouts before age 59 and a half, which, unless an exception applies, are subject to a 10% penalty on top of the regular income tax. The IRS knows that a substantial number of filers make errors on their income tax returns with respect to retirement payouts, with most of the mistakes coming from taxpayers who don't qualify for an exception to the 10% additional tax on early distributions. The IRS is looking at this issue closely. The IRS has a chart listing withdrawals taken before the age of 59 and a half that escape the 10% penalty, such as payouts made to cover very large medical costs, total and permanent disability of the account owner, or a series of substantially equal payments that run for 5 years or until age 59 and a half, whichever is later. Last year, Secure 2.0 retirement savings legislation added even more exceptions. Number 13, taking an alimony deduction. Alimony paid by cash or check under pre-2019 divorce or separation agreements is deductible by the payer and taxable to the recipient, provided certain requirements are met. For instance, the payments must be made under a divorce or separate maintenance decree or written separation agreement. The document can't say the payment is an alimony, and the payer's liability for the payments must end when the former spouse dies. You'd be surprised how many divorce decrees run afoul of this rule. Alimony doesn't include child support or non-cash property settlements. The rules on deducting alimony are complicated, and the IRS knows that some filers who claim this write-off don't satisfy the requirements. It also wants to make sure that both the payer and the recipient properly reported alimony on their respective returns. A mismatch in reporting by ex-spouses will almost certainly trigger an audit. Alimony paid pursuant to post-2018 divorce or separation agreements is not deductible, and ex-spouses aren't taxed on alimony they receive under such agreements. Older divorce pacts can be modified to follow the new tax rules if both parties concur and they modify the agreement to specifically adopt the tax changes. The IRS closely polices whether taxpayers comply with the changes. Schedule 1 of the 1040 form requires taxpayers who deduct alimony or report alimony income to fill in the recipient's Social Security number and the date of the divorce or separation agreement. Number 14, failing to report gambling winnings or claiming big gambling losses. Whether you're playing the slots or betting on the horses, one sure thing you can count on is that Uncle Sam wants his cut. Recreational gamblers must report winnings as other income on the 1040 form. Professional gamblers show their winnings on Schedule C. Failure to report gambling winnings can draw IRS attention, especially if the casino or other venue reported the amounts on Form WG2. Claiming large gambling losses can also be risky. You can deduct these only to the extent that you report gambling winnings, and recreational gamblers must also itemize. The IRS is looking at returns of filers who report large losses on Schedule A from recreational gambling, but aren't including the winnings in income. Also, taxpayers who report large losses from their gambling-related activity on Schedule C get extra scrutiny from IRS examiners who want to make sure these folks really are gaming for a living. Number 15, claiming the foreign earned income exclusion. U.S. citizens who work overseas can exclude up to $120,000 of their income earned abroad on their 2023 tax return, if they were bona fide residents of another country for the entire year, or they were outside the U.S. for at least 330 complete days in a 12-month span. Additionally, the taxpayer must have a tax home in the foreign country. The tax break doesn't apply to amounts paid by the U.S. or one of its agencies to its employees who work abroad. IRS agents actively sniff out people who are erroneously taking this break, and the issue keeps coming up in disputes before the tax court. Among the areas of IRS focus, filers with minimal ties to the foreign country they work in and who keep an abode in the U.S. Note that the U.S. abode restriction doesn't apply to individual taxpayers who work in combat zones such as Iraq and Afghanistan. Flight attendants and pilots and employees of U.S. government agencies who mistakenly claim the exclusion when they are working overseas. Number 16. Operating a marijuana business. Marijuana businesses have an onerous income tax problem. They're prohibited from claiming business write-offs, other than for the cost of the weed, even in the ever-growing number of states where it is legal to sell, grow, and use marijuana. That's because a federal statute bars tax deductions for sellers of controlled substances that are illegal under federal law, such as marijuana. The IRS is eyeing legal marijuana firms that take improper write-offs on their returns. Agents come in and disallow deductions on audit, and courts consistently side with the IRS on this issue. The IRS can also use third-party summons to state agencies, etc., to seek information in circumstances where taxpayers have refused to comply with document requests from revenue agents during an audit. Number 17, taking the research and development credit. The research and development credit is one of the most popular business tax breaks, but it's also one that IRS agents have found to be prime for abuse. The IRS is on the lookout for taxpayers that fraudulently claim R&D credits and promoters that aggressively market R&D credit schemes. These promoters are pushing certain businesses to claim the credit for routine day-to-day activities and to overinflate wages and expenses in the calculation of the credit. To be eligible for the credit, a business must conduct qualified research. That is, its research activities must rise to a level of a process of experimentation. Among the activities that aren't credit eligible, consumer-funded research, adaptation of an existing product or business, research after commercial production, and activities in where there is no uncertainty about the potential for a desired result. Number 18. Engaging in virtual currency or other digital asset transactions. The IRS is on the hunt for taxpayers who sell, receive, trade, or otherwise deal in Bitcoin or other virtual currency or other digital asset, and is using pretty much everything in its arsenal. As part of the IRS's efforts to clamp down on unreported income from these transactions, revenue agents are mailing letters to people they believe have virtual currency accounts. And the IRS has set up teams of agents to work on cryptocurrency-related audits. Additionally, all individual filers must state on page 1 of their Form 1040 whether they received, sold, exchanged, or otherwise disposed of a digital asset. The tax rules treat Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies as property for tax purposes. The IRS has a set of frequently asked questions that address selling, trading, and receiving cryptocurrency, calculating gain or loss, figuring tax basis when the currency is received by an employee or someone else for services, and much more. Number 19. failing to report a foreign bank account. The IRS is intensely interested in people with money stashed outside the U.S., especially in countries with the reputation of being tax havens. And U.S. authorities have had lots of success getting foreign banks to disclose account information. Failure to report a foreign bank account can lead to severe penalties. Make sure that if you have any such accounts, you properly report them. This means electronically filing FinCEN Report 114, known as FBAR, by April 15, 2024, to report foreign accounts that have a combined total more than $10,000 at any time during 2023. Filers who miss the April 15th deadline get an automatic 6-month extension to file the form. Taxpayers with a lot more financial assets abroad may also have to attach IRS Form 8938 to their timely filed tax returns. This is Kiplinger Personal Finance, 19 IRS Red Flags. What are your chances of being audited? By Joy Taylor, January 26, 2024. Joy Taylor is the editor of the Kiplinger Tax Letter. She is an experienced CPA and tax attorney with an LLM in taxation from New York University School of Law. After many years working for big law and accounting firms, Joy saw the light and now puts her education, legal experience, and in-depth knowledge of federal tax law to use writing for Kiplinger. She writes and edits the Kiplinger Tax Letter and contributes federal tax and retirement stories to Kiplinger.com and Kiplinger's Retirement Report. Her articles have been picked up by the Washington Post and other media outlets. Joy has also appeared as a tax expert in newspapers, on television, and on radio, discussing federal tax developments. The next article in today's issue is from Kiplinger Personal Finance, 11 Mindsets That May Actually Be Hurting Your Financial Progress. To change your finances, you'll first need to change your thinking. By Kiplinger Advisor Collective, April 10th, 2024. The way people think about money can have a greater impact on their financial success than they may think. Whether it's the way you were raised or a belief that you have come to over time, the mindset that you develop around your finances has a direct influence on the actions you take with your money and your behaviors surrounding it. These beliefs can be positive or negative, truthful or a lie. But how can you tell the difference? The financial experts of Kiplinger Advisor Collective list some of the most common money mindsets people have that may actually be hurting their progress with money, detailing not only the reasons why, but also how they can change and finally get their finances in order. Number one, it's either all or nothing. Having an all or nothing money mindset is unhelpful and hinders financial progress. It's common to discount smaller amounts of money as not being enough. Initially, however, creating the habit is more important than the amount. Whether saving, paying down debt, or investing, take the mindset of some progress is better than no progress, and do what you can. As more money is available, you can increase the amount. Keontae Jones, Dollars and Change. Number two, I can't afford that. I can't afford that is a prevalent and harmful money belief. You'd think having this mindset means you don't overspend, but it often leads to spending more to prove something to yourself and others. It comes from a place of scarcity and can make people purchase things to fill the void. Here's a money trick. Start saying, "I don't want that because I really want more of this." By Jason Bittung, Progal. Number three, more money will solve all my problems. One common harmful money mindset is the belief that more money will solve all of my problems. This mindset is harmful because it can lead to neglecting the non-financial aspects of life. One example of this is prioritizing earning and accumulating wealth at the expense of relationships, health, and personal fulfillment. It's important to find a balance between money and happiness. Greg Wellborn, First Financial Consulting. 4. I'll just use a card to pay because it's easier. People's propensity to use debit or credit cards for purchases instead of checks or cash leads to unnecessary purchases because using a card is so easy and doesn't feel like you're spending money. To solve this, start paying with cash and checks. It will require a little more work, but will psychologically help you make better purchasing decisions. Record all transactions to help with budgeting. Dennis Futch, The Tax Shop. 5. It's okay to carry a balance on my credit card. Many Americans are carrying balances on high-interest credit cards. This harmful money mindset can lead to long-term financial struggles. When individuals consistently carry balances, they accrue high-interest debt, making it harder to achieve financial stability. This not only drains resources, but also perpetuates a cycle of dependency on credit, hindering savings and investments for the future. Howard Dvorkin, Debt.com. 6. Spending less equals saving more. One harmful money mindset is the belief that spending less always equals saving more. This mindset can limit financial growth by ignoring the importance of earning more and investing wisely. To change this mindset, focus on creating a balanced approach that includes budgeting for savings, investing in professional growth, and exploring opportunities to increase income, not just cutting expenses. Amarita Choudhary, Wasabi Technologies. 7. It's better to not take risks and to play it safe. Fearing uncertainty is a significant hindrance to financial prosperity. This can lead you to not challenging yourself, which results in never knowing what could have been. While it's common to feel unsure about stepping out of your comfort zone, it's essential to do so in order to see growth. The best way to alter this mindset is to have better financial discernment on which risks are worth it. Justin Donald, Lifestyle Investor. 8. I have to keep up with the Joneses. The Joneses' money mindset detracts from both wealth and well-being. This mindset can be harmful through comparison, explanation, or keeping up. If you run your journey at your pace without explaining your means, preferences, and financial plan, your pockets and spirit will benefit simultaneously. Dr. Preston D. Cherry, Concurrent Financial Planning. 9. I have plenty of time to save for retirement later. One mistake people make is thinking they don't have to start saving for retirement now. They assume that they can wait until later. But the reality is, the sooner they start saving for retirement, the better. David Silversmith, Eisner Advisory Group, LLC. 10. Being a renter is better than owning a home. There is a lot of energy put behind not being a homeowner and instead being a renter. The timing of home ownership is different for everyone, so a lot needs to be assessed. But renting for the rest of your life is an endless expense with zero ownership of an asset that more often than not appreciates in value and contributes to net worth. A home also has lifestyle and emotions tied together with the financial aspects as well. John Bodrozek, Homezada. Number 11. Credit cards are like free money. Credit cards are not an alternative source of income. They are an excellent resource If cash is in an account earning income. They can be used to track expenses. Their savings offset any fees, and your charges earn some sort of benefits. Your benefit in using a credit card, however, is predicated on you paying the balance in full every billing cycle. Deborah W. Ellis, Ellis Wealth Planning. This is Kiplinger Personal Finance, 11 Mindsets That May Actually Be Hurting Your Financial Progress, by Kiplinger Advisor Collective, April 10, 2024. The Kiplinger Advisor Collective is the premier criteria-based professional organization for personal finance advisors, managers, and executives. The next article in today's issue is from Money.com. Attention travelers, the cost of global entry is about to increase. By Adam Hardy, editor Julia Glum, April 5, 2024. Do you want the coveted trusted traveler status that allows you to zip through the airport and border security? Soon, it'll cost you much more to apply. U.S. Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, is hiking application fees for several of its trusted traveler programs for the first time in 15 years. Effective October 1st, applications for Global Entry, Nexus, and Sentry will all require an upfront $120 fee. The original fees for each of these three programs are no longer sufficient to recover CBP's costs to administer the programs, wrote Alejandro N. Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, in the final rule published to the Federal Register on Tuesday. These three particular expedited clearance programs are for qualifying U.S. citizens, residents, and nationals who are re-entering the country by land, sea, and or air, as opposed to TSA PreCheck, which is solely for air travel originating from the U.S. The new rule has been in the works since 2020. While it doesn't directly affect the price of TSA PreCheck, the three CBP programs slated for the price hike include complementary TSA PreCheck benefits for qualifying travelers, which may result in an indirect price hike for folks looking to bundle benefits. On the other hand, the new price structure could reduce costs for some families, as it waives application fees for minors whose parents have already applied. Why trusted traveler fees are going up. Currently, all the trusted traveler initiatives charge different amounts, and the Sentry, Secure Electronic Network for Travelers Rapid Inspection Program, actually has several fees throughout the entire approval process. According to CBP, when the programs first started, each one was run individually. But as they expanded, the application process was largely streamlined. Now, the agency says it wants to harmonize the fee structure, too. What that means for Globetrotters is that the application fees are rising notably for Global Entry, Nexus, and Sentry. Here's a closer look at the programs and their fees. Global Entry currently costs $100 and includes TSA PreCheck. It allows expedited security clearance for land, sea, and air entry into the U.S. Application processing time may take up to 6 months. Membership lasts 5 years. Nexus currently costs $50 and may include TSA PreCheck for qualifying applicants. A Canadian-U.S. program, it allows expedited clearance via land, sea, and air, including pedestrian entry, to or from Canada. Application processing time may take up to 14 months. Membership lasts 5 years. Sentry currently costs $122.25 in total with fees broken up into stages. The application fee is $25. An FBI fingerprinting fee and a service fee are charged separately to reach the grand total. Benefits largely mirror Nexus, but exclude sea travel and include Mexico. Application processing time may take up to 12 months. Membership lasts 5 years. Given that the new $120 fee will be charged up front, it will cost $20 more to apply to Global Entry once the rule takes effect in October. For Nexus, it means the application fee will increase by $70. To simply apply, the fee for the Sentry program will increase $95, but the cost of the entire approval process will decrease by $2.25. Of course, simply applying does not guarantee approval. Applicants must pass a rigorous background check, being screened against terrorist and criminal databases, and then clear an in-person interview. For renewing members, the CBP recently started allowing remote video interviews. During the rulemaking process, the CBP said the higher fees are not intended to result in faster application processing times. Shakedown on credit card travel rewards. One major and ancillary effect of the new fee structure is on the high-end travel card rewards. Several of the best travel rewards credit cards include benefits that cover the costs of trusted traveler memberships. For example, Capital One's Venture Rewards credit card comes with a statement credit of up to $100 for Global Entry or TSA PreCheck. Under the new fee structure, the statement wouldn't cover the whole cost of Global Entry. Other credit card providers like American Express, Chase, and Bank of America offer similar reimbursement credits for Global Entry. Money reached out to the four card providers to see if they expect to increase their benefits in tandem with the price hike. Bank of America said it does not have current plans to increase its rewards to cover the fee hike. Capital One and American Express declined to comment on their plans, and Chase did not respond by press time. This is Money.com. Attention Travelers, the Cost of Global Entry is About to Increase, by Adam Hardy, April 5, 2024. The next article in today's issue is from Kiplinger Personal Finance, the March Magazine of 2024, Expanding Support for Caregivers. Depending on your state, you may be eligible for several weeks of paid leave to care for a loved one, by Sandra Block. Even if you've contributed regularly to your 401k plan and resisted the temptation to cash out, caring for a spouse, parent, or other family member can derail your plans for a secure retirement. A 2021 survey by AARP and the National Alliance for Caregiving found that nearly half of caregivers have experienced a financial setback, including reducing contributions to retirement savings or dipping into personal savings or retirement savings plans. Many caregivers are forced to quit their job, often during their highest earning years, cut back their hours, or switch to another job that pays less but offers more flexibility. Although the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act requires companies with at least 50 employees to give workers up to 12 weeks of leave per year to care for a family member with a serious health condition, businesses don't have to pay workers while they're on leave, although some companies do. The law requires employers to give employees the same position or an equivalent one when they return, but unpaid leave still creates a financial hardship for many caregivers. Legislation to provide federal paid leave has stalled in Congress. Increasingly, though, States are stepping into the breach. As of January 1, 2024, workers in Illinois are eligible for up to 5 days of paid family leave a year, while Colorado is providing up to 12 weeks in a 12-month period, bringing to 10 the number of states, along with Washington, D.C., that provide some form of paid leave for family caregivers. In some states, workers may be eligible for additional paid leave for their own medical issues. Starting in 2026, Minnesota, Maryland, and Maine will provide up to 12 weeks of family leave a year, and Delaware will provide 6 weeks every 24 months. New Hampshire, Vermont, and Virginia recently enacted legislation that allows employers to voluntarily participate in paid family leave programs. What we're seeing in state after state is that lawmakers are recognizing that all of us will be caregivers or need caregiving at some point, says Molly Weston Williamson, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. States that provide mandated paid family leave are funding it with payroll taxes. For example, Maine will impose a 1% payroll tax, which will be split between employers and employees. In Minnesota, employers will pay premiums ranging from 0.3% to 0.7% of taxable wages paid to employees, depending on participation in the program. Employers will be permitted to charge half of the premiums to employees by deducting the amount from their wages. The amount of pay covered by state programs varies, but is typically based on a percentage of weekly earnings, up to a maximum. For example, in California, which in 2004 became the first state to adopt paid family leave, caregivers can receive 60 to 70% of their weekly earnings, up to a maximum of $1,620 a week, for up to 8 weeks within any 12-month period. Navigating bureaucracy. If your state offers paid leave for caregivers and you believe you qualify, contact your state employment office and file your claim as early as possible. Processing paid leave applications varies a lot from state to state, Williamson says. Some states have really good turnaround times, but every state has room to improve. Most states require a document signed by your family member's health care provider attesting to the individual's medical condition. Typically, when we see claims denied or delayed, it's because of documentation that is missing, incomplete, or incorrect, Williamson says. Check your state's website for details. Many provide a checklist. Once you've submitted your application, check in periodically with the state to make sure it's being processed, she adds. State tax breaks. More than three-fourths of caregivers incur out-of-pocket costs, and the average amount they spend is $7,242 a year, according to the survey from AARP and the National Alliance for Caregiving. Individuals who are caring for someone with dementia spend an average of $8,978 a year. Depending on where you live, you may be eligible for a state tax break to offset some of your out-of-pocket caregiving costs. Oklahoma enacted legislation in 2023 that will provide a tax credit of up to $2,000 or $3,000 for individuals who are caregivers of veterans or people with dementia. Georgia, Missouri, New Jersey, and North Dakota also provide tax credits for caregivers, ranging from $150 to $2,000, and lawmakers in several other states are considering similar tax breaks. Most states have income thresholds, so not all caregivers will qualify, and New Jersey's tax credit is limited to individuals who are caring for veterans with service-connected disabilities. For more on state and federal programs to help caregivers, go to the Caregiver Resource Center section of the AARP's webpage on caregiving, www.aarp.org/caregiving. This is Kiplinger Personal Finance, the March Magazine 2024, Expanding Support for Caregivers, by Sandra Block. That's all the time we have for Money Matters this week. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org. I'm Angela Plott for the Virginia Voice.